Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chapter 31, OWLS. Ron's euphoria at helping Gryffindor scrape the Quidditch Cup was such that he could not settle to anything the next day.
I'm Matt Potts.
And I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. And the opening of the chapter this week was read by Marilyn, who won trivia at camp last summer. And their prize was to open our episode with a quote. Thank you, Marilyn.
Matt, our only announcement today is our Every Flavored Bean Conversation, which is one of our Patreon-exclusive perks. And that is, we are going to be talking about a difficult exam in our lives. You know, we don't do a bunch of practical exams the way that they do at Hogwarts, but there's one practical exam that we do in the real world, and that is a driving test. And so we're going to talk about our driving tests. I'm so excited.
I can't wait to hear the story of you getting your driver's license.
So Matt, I am telling a story on the theme of naivete today, and I'm going to actually tell you a series of brief vignettes. You come to conclusions as a little kid, and then you are much older when you realize that they aren't true. Like when I was little, the Star Spangled Banner to me was only something that you sang at Angels games. And sometimes the Rams played at Angels Stadium. And so I thought the Ram parts were the parts of the stadium where the Rams were.
Oh, the Ram parts.
Yep. And, like, I didn't figure that out until, I don't know, when was the first time you saw the lyrics of the Star-Spangled Banner printed? It was, like, fourth grade or something. And, like, there are other examples of this as well from my childhood. But one that I'm actually not going to tell you when I realized this. We really loved the movie West Side Story when I was little, and we would watch it a lot. And my parents said once, oh, the actor who plays Bernardo, he disappeared. And I was older when I realized that they meant the actor's career had disappeared, because I said socially that I thought something weird had happened with that actor and that he'd been kidnapped or something and that he had disappeared. And people were like, what are you talking about? And it was before Google. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure something violent happened. He disappeared. And like, it turned out that that was an expression, a way of speaking. I tell this story because I think that it is amazing how well-oriented children get to the world as quickly as they do. The world is very big and chaotic and scary, and kids are just little meaning makers, you know, even if they come to the wrong conclusions. And yet, when you are in a more naive place, I think that the world can seem even scarier to you, right? Like, it makes sense to me that when I didn't understand how the world worked, I literally thought that this man disappeared. And I think that we see that kind of naivete in this chapter, right? Harry is going to have a big reaction to what he sees going on in the ministry in his dream. He has almost the exactly wrong amount of experience in naivete, right? Like, he doesn't understand the way the world works the way an adult does, but he has enough experience to know that it's profoundly scary. And naivete seems to be something that is really easy to judge or to laugh about. And I think that we just all walk around with it all the time. And I just think that we should be sort of treating each other as precious and delicate all of the time, because this world is too big to understand.
Yeah, we'll go to Etymology Corner together.
Ooh.
The word naivete comes from the Latin word natus or natus, which just means born. And that later became the Latin word nativus. This is the word that we get, you know, native from, but it also just means like something that's with you when you're born. Mm. And eventually in like medieval French, it came to mean like innocent, because newborn babies are innocent, right? And that's kind of the sense, right? Like, you make assumptions about the world because you don't understand the world. But what's implied in that definition, though, is that, like, the opposite of naivete is something like cynicism, right? Where you're always suspecting another motive. You're always suspecting another story. You're always suspecting, like, a bad intention when the world comes to you. And it strikes me that, like, that's not what we want either.
Right.
Right? We don't want people to be cynical all the time. One hopes that there's some possibility between naivete and cynicism, that there's a way to like presume good intention but also keep yourself safe, because that's the place where we want Harry and these characters to be. We want them to be safe and not to be fooled, as Harry is at the end of this chapter, and that's going to require them being a little bit more suspicious than their naivete maybe allows them to be.
Well, Matt, I am naively going to walk into this 30-second recap.
Are you going to naively ask me if I'm ready?
No, I am wise. Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
So Ron is very excited, and he's telling everybody how excited he is about, and he keeps recapping the story over and again. So Harry and Hermione don't know how to tell him about Grop, but they tell him about Grop, and he's like, well, maybe Hagrid's not fired yet, so it's okay. And then they have all their exams, and they go to, the judges or test takers come, and then they go to Charms, and then he meets one of them, and he does the Patronus thing, and is very impressed. And then they're at astronomy, and Umbridge goes to the hut, and there's a big fight, and Hagrid runs away, and then in history, he's trying to get in someone else's brain, then he sees Sirius being tortured.
Yeah.
Oof. Spent too much time on Ron on the first two pages of the chapter, and not enough time on the last 19 pages of the chapter. Classic 30-second recap mistake. Okay, Vanessa, I'm going to count you in.
Okay, thank you.
3, 2, 1. Go.
Ron is being really annoying. They're getting really worried about their OWLs. It's time to start taking their OWLs. It turns out that it's Lee Jordan who's been putting Nifflers through the window during the astronomy OWL exam. Umbridge tries to not just fire Hagrid, but arrest Hagrid. And he's like there and ready to take him to Azkaban. And McGonagall is like literally over my dead body. And she throws her body in front of Hagrid's body. And she gets stunned 4 times and Hagrid runs away. And Harry has a dream and he wakes up and Sirius is being tortured.
That was excellent. Truly, that was excellent.
I did all but the last 2 pages where a very important thing happened.
You got to a lot of things, though. You got to a lot of things. So, Vanessa, this chapter is entitled OWLS because these fifth years are taking their exams. I mean, there are some big examples of naivete, like big consequential examples of naivete in this chapter. But one of the kind of more humorous ones is a kind of cottage industry of magical memory and intellect aids has risen up at Hogwarts. All these sixth and seventh years who have already completed their OWL exams are now coming to the fifth years and saying, oh boy, you know, I have some of this. I'll sell you this. It'll help your memory. It'll help you stay focused. It'll help you with all these things. And it seems like Harry and Ron buy it. They don't feel really prepared. They're not as good at school as Hermione is, and they're willing to take some magical supplements to help them do better on their exams. And one of the things that Hermione does is she like confiscates these items from the older students because she's a prefect. And, you know, she tells Harry and Ron, like, it's a scam. Like, one of the items, they're dried doxy droppings. I don't know what a doxy is, but that sounds gross.
It's poop.
It's poop. It's poop. And even after she dumps out this one thing. Hermione mentions that she confiscated some dragon claw, some powdered dragon claw. And Ron's like, oh, really? You have dragon claw? They still want so deeply to believe that there could be some memory aid, that their naivete is able to be exploited by these other students.
Matt, I'm actually really interested in that, though. I'm really interested in how we become more childlike in these moments of stress, right? When there's like tremendous plane turbulence and you start like making deals, like, oh, if we land safely, I'm going to, right? That we hop to magical thinking when we are in moments of stress. And it can be so clear when you're outside, if you're the calm one, if you're someone who's studied enough, like Hermione, like these things don't work. Obviously, they are just preying upon your anxiety. But like, if you are anxious, what is it? It does. It makes us more naive. It like shuts down some center of our brain, like fear or anxiety or any number of things, right? Like being newly in love can do that. Being like where certain high levels of thought can stop. And so we do, we become more susceptible to being taken advantage of.
Well, maybe it's not naivete then. Maybe it's when you have fewer options, you're willing to take more risks, right? Like if you feel fully prepared for a test, you're like, yeah, that probably doesn't work. So why would I take it? But when you're not prepared for a test, you're like, that probably doesn't work. But if there's a 10% chance it works, then that's 10% better than I'm going to do. And so, right? Like maybe it's just more self-aware. Like naivete, I think, is maybe more like Ron, who afterwards is like, oh, the dragon claw? You have dragon claw? Like he still believes the thing actually works. There's a different version, which is like, I think that might be a scam, but I'm willing to risk it because even if it helps a little, I need all the help I can get. But I think what you're saying is true. I'm not arguing. I just think there's probably some kind of point at which you move from naivete into self-aware risk.
Right.
That is not a bright line. You kind of move from one to the other. So this relationship between necessity and naivete, or like fear and risk and naivete, is really interesting because one of the things that makes Harry naive, I think, in this chapter is that he doesn't know what he's supposed to be afraid of, and so he is not appropriately afraid. Right? They have told him that Voldemort can get into his brain or has access to his brain somehow. But it doesn't seem clear to me that he knows that Voldemort can get in there and trick him into doing things that he would not otherwise do.
Right.
And so he's not appropriately assessing the risk of this kind of connection that their minds have. And because he's not appropriately assessing the risk, he's not cynical enough to imagine what all those things could be. And so a very uncomfortable thing, like going to Snape and asking for more occlumency lessons, is something he's not willing to do because he's too naive to know what the risks of not getting better at occlumency are, right? And this continues. I mean, that's why he's taken advantage of, and we'll talk about that as we keep thinking about Harry's reactions in this chapter. But I think it starts with this decision, which he made, you know, a couple chapters ago, but which he persists in now because his friends are telling him, Hermione's telling him, you have to get back to occlumency. And he's like, I'm not going to do that because those lessons are awful. And he's naive about the risk or unaware of the risk or some measure of both. And it leads to some opportunities for Voldemort to take advantage of his naivete.
Yeah. I think that this is why we don't believe that children should be legally like held responsible for some of the decisions that they make, right? Because until you understand the depths of the risks, like Harry actually makes a reasonable decision here, right? He's like, whatever, I'm gonna have these dreams. My scar has hurt and I've had weird dreams my whole life. And like, who cares? And it's not worth this horrible time with Snape where he invades my thoughts. And I don't trust Snape, and Snape doesn't want it, and Dumbledore's not explaining it to me. Harry actually, with the information that he has, makes completely reasonable decisions to not continue with occlumency. And the problem is that he doesn't know what he doesn't know. And I think that when you get older, right, when you have a little bit less innocence, you're like, okay, I don't know what I don't know, but it's probably bad, right? Like, I know from experience that it's probably important that I do the thing. And so, right, like, I'm going to try. Enough people have told me to be sure to be careful in this one way. Enough people who I respect, even if they won't get into specifics with me, I'm just going to trust it. And yeah, I guess this was the first time in reading this where I was like, Harry actually, with the information that he had, made a completely reasonable decision, right? Like, Snape doesn't want to teach him. It is miserable there. His dream helped save Mr. Weasley's life. Like, the only one who's suffering, as far as he knows, from these dreams are him. So, like, it is only his naivete that sort of gets in the way from him continuing to do occlumency. It's not laziness. It's not, you know, like an unwillingness to sort of humble himself at Snape's feet. It's really just that, like, innocence, right? He, like, doesn't have the context of the stakes.
Yeah, I think we have another, like, kind of boundary line between naivete and something else here, right? Because, as you say, given all the information that others have provided Harry, like, I'm not sure he should be expected to make different presumptions. Like, what they've told him about the danger of this is not that he could be tricked. What they told him about the danger of this is that Voldemort might get some information that's inside his brain.
Right.
More like a regular spy where I go in and I see some information that I'm not supposed to have seen. I might find the location of Grimmauld Place. And that sounds dangerous, of course, and which is why Harry does the occlumency lessons in the first place. But, you know, he doesn't trust Snape. Snape is not kind to him. He's abusive to Harry and other students. Right. So he's not sure he wants to be part of these lessons and let Snape into his mind. And then, like you said just now, the only time that he's ever had a vision, it saved Arthur Weasley's life. Right? What he knows is that these visions can give him important information. And no one has told him not to trust them. No one has told him that he has to be suspicious because of this connection between their minds. Maybe if he were less naive, he would make that assumption. But this is all new territory. It's all new stuff. I know, like you were saying, it's hard to hold children responsible when adults should be giving them more context to understand what's going on.
This is just a moment where I really think I see this kind of tension around naivete in my life, right? When, like, a kid in your life really wants to do some, like, big, exciting career, and you don't want to sit down and be like, now, statistically, it is not likely that you're going to be the one who's successful in this way, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, my 16-year-old has just started driving lessons. I am terrified. I want her to be a very careful driver. I do not want to, like, scare her and, like, show her videos of what could happen to her if she texted and drove, but I really don't want her to text and drive. And so, like, how much are you willing to share with a child in order to, like, appropriately scare them? And, like, that is a psychological question about you. You have to understand something about their psyche and how they will handle, like, scare tactics versus too much information versus too little information. And then there's also, like, you don't want your kids to carry on your baggage, right? So it's also, like, I am a very scared driver because I have a friend who died in a car accident when I was 16. I don't want Ellen to have that trauma, but I want her to learn from it, right? And so I actually think that this moment between, like, teachers not wanting to tell Harry how scared of his own thoughts he should be, and therefore Harry not getting it, like, this just feels really, like, apt to me of, like, something that, you know, as someone who just, like, used to advise freshmen, there were certain careers that I wanted to be like, good luck. But you're like, you're 18. I don't know. Maybe you can do this really, like, wild thing.
My own sense is, like, life or death things. Like, I'm okay speaking about the very statistically reasonable, like, risk of death with driving and using a little bit of, like, being pretty frank about, like, how risky that is. And I think that's kind of the situation Harry's in. Like, these are life or death questions.
Except it's not just while he's in the car. It's all the time.
It's all the time, right? So why? That's why he has to know. No one is talking to Harry enough about what this connection to Voldemort means. And I think they're trying to protect him from something else. This is getting beyond the scope of book five here. But I think what they're actually trying to protect him from is the fact that they think he might have to sacrifice himself. They don't want to tell him that, right? But there's other stuff. I feel like they should be telling him that Sirius is at risk and that others are at risk if he doesn't do occlumency, not just like in a vague way, but in a very specific way, right? Like, these are the ways you could be taken advantage of. And this is why you need to learn to protect yourself from being taken advantage of in this way.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So here's another character in this chapter who is kind of trying to navigate the line between naivete and cynicism. And that's Hagrid, right? So there are a couple of things going on with Hagrid. I think it's probably very naive of Hagrid to think that these children can care for his giant brother, right? Like, look at Hagrid. Look at how he's a half-giant who has been, you know, beaten and wounded for weeks and weeks since he returned. And now he's in a handoff care of the person who was beating and wounding him to three children? I mean, that's just, it's the same Hagrid story where Hagrid just can't see the harm and can't imagine how this creature could harm these children. But he can, and he would. That is something like naivete, right? I mean, it's almost a willful ignorance. Maybe that's different than naivete, but there is something about, he's not cynical enough about the dangers. He's not appropriately assessing risk just because he assumes everything will end up okay. Everything will turn out good. And that's the wrong assumption to make when things are this dangerous.
Yeah, really think about this with me for a second. Do you not believe that desperation brings on naivete?
Yeah, that's true. You're right. You said that before. That's true.
Right? Like, you just have to believe it, right? Have to believe that, like, you're going to be an exception, that this is going to work out. And there are studies that show, right, like, if you're optimistic, like, sometimes things will actually go more in your favor for whatever reason, for, like, biochemical reasons. And I do think that that is part of what is going on here with Hagrid. He cannot get himself to leave if Grop is going to be alone.
Yeah.
This is now the situation he's in. He knows he's going to get kicked out of Hogwarts, and, like, this is his last attempt. Now, I think that there are better last attempts for him to make. I think he could have told McGonagall, you know, I think he could have told an adult who he trusts. But I really do think that, like, often desperation can make us return to a kind of innocence where we just, like, grit our teeth and believe and, like, pray in an innocent way and just, you know, say things like, we have to trust that this is going to work out. Because what else can you do?
Or maybe it's a little bit of both, right? I mean, we know that Hagrid is inclined to trust too much, right? He tries to teach the students with blast-ended scroots, and that's maybe not the best decision.
Right.
And that makes him uniquely susceptible to trusting too much when desperation invites him to, right? And so this giant, who's an order of magnitude more dangerous than the blast-ended scroot, but also his half-brother, and also a person he needs to protect for a lot of reasons, for the sake of his brother, but also for the sake of the approaching war— he needs to believe that Grop can be cared for. And so, already inclined to believe these things, desperation makes him believe it.
The thing that really does strike me as naive, though, Matt, like, only with hindsight, Hagrid is walking around campus and is like, I'm clearly about to get fired, right? Like, all of these Nifflers, Umbridge is looking for a reason to fire me. But what ends up happening on this night, which we see from the astronomy tower, is that people are sent to arrest Hagrid. Wand's out, right? Like, they are not here to, like, escort him off the property. They are there to arrest him. And I'm wondering if you think it was naive of Hagrid to believe that they were just going to fire him. I guess part of me is just like, if I'm Hagrid, I just assume I'm getting arrested all the time. Because, like, the wizarding world loves to arrest me, right? Like, every time anyone is getting accused of anything, Hagrid is getting arrested. And we're in a moment where people are getting rounded up again. And so, like, I don't know. I don't know why it didn't occur to us. But of course Hagrid was going to get arrested.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of this until you raised it in our pre-show discussion, right? I hadn't thought of this as naive from Hagrid, but I think it is. You're right. He's been arrested wrongly several times. And that was when Dumbledore was in charge.
Right.
And now Umbridge is. And also the other reason is because other people are aware. I mean, I'm not sure that Hermione was expecting an arrest. But when Harry says, well, he didn't put the Nifflers in Umbridge's office, Hermione's like, come on, Harry, how could you be so naive? She actually uses the word. She's saying, like, you know right. that Umbridge doesn't need evidence. She'll use any pretense right. to get him out. And then she says later in the chapter, he's only part human. She hates part humans. Yeah. She'll do whatever. Like, it seems like Hermione was expecting anything already. And I think you're right. Hagrid probably should have been.
Yeah. So, Matt, this is our last Lectio in book 5. And I picked a sentence, and I'm just so happy for you and your little etymology corner heart with the sentence that I picked. The sentence is, I mistranslated Ewaz, said Hermione furiously. It means partnership, not defense. I mixed it up with Ewaz.
Oh, Ewaz.
Yeah, it's Ewaz, not Ewaz. Didn't this just, like, make your nerdy little heart so happy?
Yes.
So, Matt, step one of Lectio Divina, what is literally going on in this sentence? I can start us off.
Okay.
Hermione has just come back from her ancient runes exam, and she is so annoyed at herself because she's sure she messed up on one of the translations. And I just think it's very funny that she messed up the words for partnership and defense.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Why in runes are the words partnership and defense so close? There's just an I difference.
That's very common. You know, the word for host and hostel come from the same root.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, when we partner with others, we take risks, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Step two is, what other stories does it remind us of? I'll read us the sentence one more time. I mistranslated Ewaz, said Hermione furiously. It means partnership, not defense. I mixed it up with Ewaz.
I'm thinking of Ghostbusters. Dan Aykroyd's character is always talking about these, like, ancient Mesopotamian gods, like it's matter of fact, everybody knows this information. And the other people are like, what are you talking about, right? There's some of that dynamic going on here where Hermione is so frustrated because obviously the runic words were different in this case and she made a stupid error, but it's all a mystery to Harry and Ron. How about you? Do you have any ideas?
It reminds me of The Great Gatsby. There's a scene in Great Gatsby, you know, where Gatsby kisses Daisy for the first time. And he, like, has some sort of beautiful revelation. And the line is something like, it's as if he heard a tuning fork pitched against a star, right? It's like this really beautiful language. And then it says, and the incarnation was complete. And there's this misunderstanding that he has that, like, hearing some sort of, like, semblance of truth in the universe was actually about kissing Daisy, when really he just, like, had this moment of, like, profound transcendence for whatever reason, simultaneously at the same moment that he kissed Daisy. And it ruins his life that he, like, thinks that these two things are one thing, that he doesn't keep them distinct. And yeah, if you think something is a partnership, but it's actually a defense, right? Hmm. Like, two things can look very similar, but actually be very different. Okay, Matt, step three. What does the sentence remind you of in your own life? I mistranslated AWAS, said Hermione furiously. It means partnership, not defense. I mixed it up with AWAS.
I mean, I don't do a lot of translation in my life, but I do some, right? I mean, almost every time I preach, which is 2 to 3 times a month, I look at the original Greek. I don't really read Greek well, but I know enough that I can like look at the Greek and try to gain some interesting meaning from it or subtlety from it. And I have at times like looked at old sermons where I've been like, I preached on the wrong meaning of that word. Like I'll refer back to an old sermon and I'll say like I translated a word some way and I was like, that was just incorrect. And I built a whole sermon around an incorrect translation. And I'm glad that those people don't know Greek. Because they just thought it was a dandy sermon from a smart guy who knows Greek.
It was a dandy sermon.
How about you, Vanessa? What does this remind you of in your own life?
It reminds me of like genuine misunderstandings I have had with people over moments where we really do believe that there are different definitions of the word, like semantic arguments, right? We all hate semantic arguments. But when somebody can call you something and you just have totally different, like maybe not even definitions, but connotations with the word, right? Like how imprecise language is. That's what it reminds me of from my own life. That like two really reasonable people who speak the same language, have the same cultural references, can still just like deeply misunderstand one another. And we've been, I guess this just makes me feel like we're set up to fail by language, partnership and defense. What does this make you feel called to?
I think something related to that, you know, just like the idea that partnership and defense have this linguistic association in runic is related to that thing I said before, which is that like the word host and hostility come from the same word. Enemy and host in Latin are the same word, actually. And I think it's just this idea of, like of risk, like being in human relationship means risk, right? Mm. So it's not about choosing the risky or the non-risky association. It's deciding which risks are worth taking in any situation. And hopefully in most cases, not always, but hopefully in most cases, the risk worth taking is one towards partnership or towards hospitality. I mean, I think that's a lot what I think about. You know, I write and teach about questions of forgiveness and peace and justice and those kinds of things. And those questions are always questions of assessing risk and deciding which risks are the ones worth taking and living towards. How about you, Vanessa?
I think it just makes me want to be more intentional in my communication, Matt, which I know sounds like maybe obvious, but check in with people, make sure that like what I said was heard in the way that I meant it. And just communication is delicate and it's all that we have. So, you know, sort of treat it as precious.
Thanks for Lectio this week, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hi, everybody. I am just dropping into your feed here to let you know that starting June 6th, you are invited to a class, Living Joyfully, with me. Living Joyfully is going to be a 4-week class dedicated to bringing more joy to the everyday. Every Thursday in June, we will come together over Zoom to think through big questions like, what is joy? What relationship do I want to have with joy? Where am I missing opportunities to bring a joyful spirit to my daily life? I ran a month-long class like this in January that focused on courage, and after getting really incredible participant feedback, I'm thrilled to be using the same model with this new focus. Each week, we're going to begin with a journal prompt. We'll then have a conversation focused on a different aspect of joy, and then we will do a sacred reading practice to see what meaning we can glean from texts about joy. If you know that you want some self-reflection in your life but struggle to hold time and space for it, then this class is for you. This kind of internal work is often really easier to perform and regard seriously when it's undertaken with a like-minded community. And so through 4 weeks of supportive, collaborative work, we will build intention and develop rituals for more joyful living.
Register before June 6th by heading to notsorryworks.com. That's notsorryworks.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This week's voicemail is from Alex.
Hey, Vanessa and Matt. I was listening to the last episode of the podcast, and something stuck out to me that I really liked about Matt's take from the Florilegia, that Harry is kind of just hanging on to this knowledge that he didn't choose to be there, and that's kind of helping him through. And it reminded me of Sirius's story and how, when he's asked about how he survived Azkaban, he said, "I think the only thing that really helped me get through it was the knowledge that I was innocent." And I think that's a really powerful message that comes up a lot throughout the series. And, you know, I have a friend that is going through a really bad divorce, and he often says to me, "I just don't know why these bad things happen to me and nobody's held accountable." And I think one of the things that's really hard about growing up is realizing that justice is never really ever guaranteed, but we can take some kind of solace. And it's not a lot of solace. It's just enough to get us through that if we're acting rightly and we're innocent and bad things happen to us, that at least it isn't our fault and that we've done the best that we can. And I think that's a really important lesson that's hard for a lot of people to learn, but that I really liked about the Florilegia and Sirius's story and the series in general. So thanks, guys.
Thanks, Alex, for that voice memo. In a former life, I was a college admissions counselor. And so I read a lot of college admissions essays. And there are a few I remember. I mean, they kind of, I'll be honest, a lot of them just sort of blend into one another. But one of the best ones I ever read, I believe it was a student from the Midwest who grew up on a farm. And there was one line, which is just a line that I've actually kept with me since then. And he wrote that he had learned from his work on the farm that the only guarantee you get from a hard day's work is a sore back and a clear conscience.
Mm.
I was like, boy, that's either a really wise 18-year-old or an 18-year-old with a really wise uncle.
Doesn't matter.
Who told him that. Doesn't matter. Because he's right. And you're right, Alex. It's not enough comfort. You're right. But sometimes it's just enough to get us through. So, you know, blessings to your friend. I hope he makes it through. And it's really a really awful thing he's going through. And I'm glad that he has you to support him. Yeah, and we wish him only good things as he moves along. Now is the time in the episode when we remember those in our community who have been loved and lost. Angela, who was a mother, a grandmother, a mentor, and a friend. Anu Mathur, 61, who was a designer, artist, and the most beloved Masi. Frank Messerschmidt, 89, a husband, father, and grandfather. A jokester who was loved by all humans and cats. Let light perpetual shine upon them.
Matt, we now offer blessings to characters in the chapter. Who would you like to bless?
Yeah, I think I'd like to bless Fang.
Hmm.
When Hagrid's arrested, Fang reacts the way any loyal friend in that situation would and pays the price And of course, Hagrid won't leave Fang behind. Hagrid carries Fang off. But, you know, we're dog people, Vanessa, and we admire the loyalty and the love of dogs. And we see Fang acting courageously and without regard for his own well-being when his good friend Hagrid is at risk. Who are you blessing, Vanessa?
So this is my favorite moment in the whole series. It is like a talisman that I carry with me of like what I think courage is, and that is Professor McGonagall in this scene. There are several people from the ministry attacking Hagrid. Hagrid is a very large man. Spells are being cast, and McGonagall just throws herself into the middle of this mess. And, you know, says, leave him alone. Alone, I say. On what grounds are you attacking? He has done nothing. And there's just something so beautiful. This is ultimate Gryffindor. She is just witnessing an injustice and putting her body in the middle of it. And as we will hear later in this chapter, you know, Hermione is like, she's not young anymore, right? Like, we have faith that Madame Pomfrey is going to be able to sort of return her to rights. But when I think of the kind of person who I want to be McGonagall in this moment, who's just throwing herself into the middle of a violent situation and doing everything she can to stand up for what's right.
I mean, it's like Fang.
Yeah.
Love and loyalty.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Matt, next week we're reading Book 5, Chapter 32, Out of the Fire, through the theme of isolation with Casper Ter Kyle. A few reminders before we give our thanks. We still have spots available on our Wuthering Heights pilgrimage and our Northanger Abbey pilgrimage. You can find out more about that at notsorryworks.com. This was a Not Sorry production. We are a feminist production company. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Vanessa Zoltan. We are edited and produced by AJ Yaramas. Our music is by Evan Paisau and Nick Bull, and we are distributed by Acast.
Thanks this week to Alex for their voicemail, to Ariana Nettleman, Julia Argy, Margaret H. Willison, Nikki Zoltan, Hannah Rehack, Casper Ter Kyle, Courtney Brown, Natalie Folkerts, Stephanie Paulsell, and everyone who sent in the names of their loved ones this week.
Star Spangled Banner to me was only something that you sang at Angels games, because that is the sports game where I went to. And
because your family wasn't patriotic, you didn't sing it every morning.
Exactly.